The Ticket.
Podcasts are brought to you in part by Lewis Jewelers, the official jeweler of The Ticket and proud partner of Michigan Athletics.
Online at WTK.com. You know, just real quick to gloss over something that you talked about earlier, Iris, so we can get to football business. You know, the disinterest, or so I thought, the disinterest for the Golden State Warriors. Man, you forget, I forget, we forget that, you know, Memphis is used to playing without Ja Morant. I think the stat is 20-5 without Ja Morant. So this is a team that figured some things out in the regular season, you know, has some role definition without him on the court, had some balanced scoring last night. Hard for me to look at how Golden State played and say that, man, it does feel like maybe they aren't as dialed in as they were. But you see, there's a real price. Like, you can get, they can beat you. They can. I mean, the last game, Golden State didn't lead until the end. So, and then they come out and they blow the doors off of you. This team can beat you without Ja Morant. They aren't, you know, you don't get into some of the extreme opinions like, oh, maybe they're better off. You see that kind of dumb stuff pop off. No, that's not true. But they are not dead in the water like maybe they seem. Maybe I tap danced on their grave too quickly.
They'll probably finish it out at home with tomorrow night, whenever Game 6 is. I'm sure. I kind of assume that's going to, you know, the way it's going to play itself out, because they had the 3-1 lead. It's pretty easy to be like, yeah, we're up 3-1. We're on the road. We're gonna, you know, whatever it is. But I think that they're going to take care of business. And
yeah, they all better show up. Like, you can't just sleepwalk through these games because they don't have Ja Morant. Right. You see, they tried to go Michigan. They started dancing, doing jump around.
And they have to win it in 6, because if you don't win it in 6 and you have to go back, right, and play a Game 7 in Memphis next Monday, you're not going to want to do that. Right. So you want to finish this out tomorrow night at home. And they probably feel that they can. And they probably had that somewhat in the back. Understand the motivation. Sometimes the lack of motivation of professional athletes, or the lack of teamwork on a night when it's a playoff game. I understand in a regular season you have an off night, but a night like that last night in a playoff game, got to give Memphis a lot of credit for playing pretty good defense and making them work. And because Golden State was not hitting shots,
yeah, everyone showed up
and everyone showed up.
Man, that's the thing, you know, and that's, you expect that from Golden State.
Teamwork makes the dream work, Sam.
Yeah, but you see, I mean, this was not a vintage JP game, for instance, by any stretch. So they definitely need all their guys to show up, too. On the other side, I just was talking to EA about the series between Boston and Milwaukee. And he was like, hey, man, it's the Bucks. It's the Bucks all the way. Now, Chris Middleton is obviously out. But, hey, man. It's one of those things where even without him, you see other guys start to show up and play. And Milwaukee, when plays had to be made down the stretch, you know, you got a big rebound by Bobby Portis down the stretch, rebound and put back. And I mean, Boston had their hands on the ball first, and then Marcus Smart, 2 offensive opportunities down the stretch. Jrue Holiday, 2 stops first, an outstanding block. And throws it off him out of bounds. And then, you know, a chance to get up a final shot. And he picks his pocket at half court. I mean, Milwaukee, you know, another team kind of showing, even shorthanded, they can come out and have everyone show up, everyone contribute, and beat a team that, again, was trending up. To, I mean, I love Boston's ability to play both ends of the floor. And you saw Milwaukee be the team that made the defensive stops, like that made the defensive plays to turn the game, to win the game. You need one rebound. They couldn't get that one rebound. And Milwaukee winds up coming out on top.
That was a great closing stretch of the game. The way Milwaukee ended that game was pretty phenomenal.
Yeah, so, I mean, that lends itself more to EA's point on Milwaukee because I was definitely feeling Boston a little bit. So, yeah, definitely some entertaining NBA action last night, depending on your vantage point. But I wanted to get to these meetings, Ira, because you could piggyback day after day with the topics, but coaches are getting increasingly touchy about the concept of poaching. And this is a big, big topic at all of these meetings, and wondering what these leagues are going to come together and do about it. Just as in one of the reports that you cited, they started talking about the Big Ten. And while this is obviously a topic in Big Ten and, you know, talent drain, are you going to be poached? Another big storyline is, man, this is about to be a financial boon, a financial windfall for teams in the Big Ten Conference coming up here very, very shortly.
Sam, so right now the ACC meetings are happening down in Amelia Island. What's that, South Carolina, wherever that is. But they're having our friend Andrea Adelson amongst many reporters that are there. So I've been following her reporting. The topics are pretty much the same everywhere, right? Every conference is going to talk about NIL. Every conference is going to talk about transfer portal. Every conference is going to talk about realignment or dropping divisions or how are they going to schedule in the future. And every conference is talking about their TV rights. That's every single one of them, how much money they're making, because all of them are related to some, you know, in some way, shape, or form to another. And so I was reading an article from The Athletic on the Big Ten, and the Iowa writer, Scott Docterman, he did a great job writing up what's coming up for the Big Ten, which is they're up next for media rights. Right, each school in the Big Ten right now gets $54 million from TV rights. They're expecting that number to double for the next TV rights deal. And why are they expecting that, Sam? Because the SEC signed a 10-year, $3 billion deal with a couple of networks. It's $300 million or so a year for 10 years starting in 2024. The Big Ten and the SEC dance in those waters, right? The ACC, the Pac-12, the Big 12, they swim in shallower waters. And that was one of the conversations that came out of, because the ACC's contract runs through 2030, whatever it is, and it's a lot less, right? Yeah, their contract's worth a lot less. So the money that's with, you know, how many people are watching your games impacts the players' ability to be viewed. So their NIL and their visibility and their how many players get drafted out of each conference is a number that gets put out there every year now, right? And what does the ACC number look like compared to what it used to, you know, and compared to the SEC? These are all things that are happening. And yeah, the quote that the write-up that I gave to you from Andrea about the poaching part in particular, because I think that this one, for the ACC, it's about scheduling and realignment. Their money's already kind of locked up and they're all locked into this long-term contract. It's really a lot of it is about the poaching of players and what our schedule is going to look like. So on the poaching of players, she said lots of discussion about tampering as well. Every coach I talked to said they have had at least one player offered big money to transfer out. The bigger concern I heard from coaches is the possible quote unquote talent drain as a result of the big money offers out there and the effect on the league. And that was the part that you were talking about.
Yeah. A lot of accusations being hurled at the SEC. You know, you even had, I don't know if you saw this, you even had Nick Saban respond to some tampering charges. I like that we seem to be trending towards specificity. And right now, you saw every coach say, oh, they had at least one player approach with a big deal. You need to start naming names. If, you know, first step to accountability is the call out, right? And then you can start developing penalties. You need to have receipts. I don't think Scott Satterfield, as he, the Louisville coach who called out Alabama, who basically said, hey, man, you know, guy goes in, he immediately has a spot. You kind of have a feeling that the conversations were going on before he jumped in the portal, right? How does that happen? And Nick Saban said, we don't have to poach anyone. It's not me. I mean, you know, if someone else is giving him an NIL deal, that's not me. Problem is, like I said, you need to have receipts, but you need more where that came from. And I think we might be trending in that direction. And I base that a lot on the conversation we had from a basketball perspective with Phil Martelli, because I think it applies. And I talked about this yesterday. Coaches seem to be saying that tie that's bound them, you know, that brotherhood that you could be fired, you could be let go at any time. You know, you need to maintain relationships. You don't know who you'll need a job from or a recommendation from. So they're very reluctant to say, hey, this guy is breaking the rules. Well, now with this every man for himself environment that seems to be bubbling more to the surface, maybe coaches will be more willing to say, hey, look, so-and-so came and bothered my player, and I got proof. I got evidence. Ira, I think it would be a cause worthy of their time. I think it'd be very worthy of their time.
I would save your receipts, and I think we're not worthy, Sam.
Did you say save your receipts or Xavier?
I said save your receipts, and I also said we're not worthy. Sam, the other thing that they were talking about, did you know that when it comes to transfer within the SEC, that if a player wants to transfer within the SEC, that he has to be in the portal by February 1st?
I didn't know that.
So the ACC coaches were talking about this, and the chair of their coaches is Dave Clawson, the Wake Forest head coach, and he said, a player wants to leave after the season, that's fair game, but you don't want to have a player going through all of your spring practice with you, and then you're playing against them 4 months later. That's their reasoning behind that rule, and it sounds like the ACC is going in that direction. A couple reasons what jumped out to me when I saw that, a couple things. One is, well, this is why you don't see a lot of SEC players in the portal right now. The players that are coming in the portal are coming from other conferences because SEC players were in the portal by February 1st, apparently, because of this rule. Could other conferences adopt this rule? It would speed up the process a little bit.
Well, and it removed the disadvantage, man. I mean, the SEC has the advantage of having an idea of what their rosters are going to look like from based on at least who they have on their rosters right now. You don't necessarily know who you're going to add after the spring, but you at least know that who you have is who you're going to have moving forward. That is an advantage when it comes to roster construction for these coaches. And I think there's something to be said. Is that beneficial to the teams? Absolutely it is. Is it beneficial to the student athlete? And this is the danger when you start to put these rules in place and you don't have the student athletes with a seat at the table. Because if I'm a guy, and I'm going through, I want to go through spring ball to see where I stand and then make my decision accordingly. You're removing that option for players in the SEC. So, I mean, it's a tightrope act. I mean, you gotta be mindful of the past and how when you ran roughshod over player consideration seemingly at every turn, and now it's coming back to bite you. You could probably push this through and make this rule. What will the consequence be when it comes to the relationship with players?
We haven't heard any pushback, Sam, in the SEC, which surprises me because you can always enter the portal. Like, that's the thing, right? If you enter the portal now, no, you're not going to be eligible without a waiver for this fall or winter, but you can still transfer, which means you could have gone through spring practice at Michigan, transfer to Michigan State, and tell them everything, right? This rule means you can't even it says you cannot transfer to another school. I don't know how this
school or another SEC school.
So from within your conference.
Okay,
right?
Within the conference.
So I don't know how this hasn't gotten that there's has not been a lot of public conversation about it. I'm surprised it hasn't gotten pushed back on, and because of what you're talking about with the legality of it, because this is still the block of a transfer. It's not saying you can't transfer within the conference and you still have to sit out. It says you can't transfer within the conference. And at some point it seems like this is gonna get overruled.
Yeah, I would think so. I would think so. I think that the farthest that the other leagues would go to maybe avoid an immediate lawsuit is just kind of limiting it to you can't do an in-conference transfer. They probably have to go through a waiver process or something like that. I mean, I mean that's the best thing that I could come up with that would prevent, like you said, immediately bringing this up. And I wonder if a lot of SEC players are aware of the difference. You know, I because you're right. You see this and you're like, wait a minute. You know, guys in other leagues have more freedom to transfer. Why is that? You would think that they would immediately be trying to call that out unless they just don't feel like the options in league are that great for them anyway. I mean, I don't know. I didn't know that was a rule until you just brought it up.
And I didn't know it was a rule until I read it last night.
Yeah, and I wonder if there are a lot of players who are in the same boat that, you know, think that, okay, this is just a what's going on in other leagues too. You can't transfer in league after a certain date. You got to go out of league. No, that's just the SEC thing. And that's, you know, the thinking is everyone wants to go to the SEC anyway. I think you're absolutely right. The SEC just has a more open window. You know, a one-way window. They can bring in, but they aren't necessarily sending out at that window of time. We got to get to a break, 7:02 on a Thursday morning. More on the other side here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050, WTK and the Ticket, the official voice of University of Michigan Sports, Ann Arbor, a Cumulus station.
The Rolling Stone Music Now podcast gets inside the biggest stories with Rolling Stone senior writer Brian Hyatt.
Now here is my conversation with Jacob Knoll. Your story is an amazing one, and obviously you lost your dad when you're only 1 year old.
It was definitely a screwy way to grow up. I think that a lot of people never heard of who I am, and then they see me join this band and they must think this kid must have just handed everything, or nepotism kid. It's a gift that I have an opportunity to sing in such a big band like my father and my uncle's band, Sublime.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you live. Listen.